Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, January 6th, 2008, and this is show number 129. I got a lot of nice feedback on the sound improvements with the new mixer and the new microphone. I've been having a ball with it. Here's one from Jenna in Massachusetts. Great new sound. Thank your husband for us. Maybe this is to make amends for the dead battery issue. Can't wait to hear about how Bart sounds on the new system, and I wish I had a Honda Bob. Well, hey, thanks for the nice comments, Jen. I'll send along your thanks to Steve. Unfortunately, with Bart, he's got some problems with his broadband connection that you'll hear a lot about, so the sound isn't as good as it will be when he gets his broadband problems fixed up. But it's still a good interview, I think. Well, Mara from Canada wrote in with a lovely note. Here's what she had to say. Hi, Allison. I wrote a review of your podcast in the Canadian iTunes store. I was the first one to do so. I just love your podcast. The information you share with the audience about Mac-related topics is very interesting and enjoyable. Thanks for the great show each week, and I look forward to your next episode. I wanted to let you know that you do have fans in Canada. Eh? Mara. I appreciate so much your taking the time to write a review for the Canadian iTunes listeners and sending me an email as well. I know that takes time. Makes my day to get emails like this, Mara. I really appreciate your time. Well, Michael G. has been a good friend of the show for a long time, and he sent in this voice recording. It's always nice to hear from him. Let's give a listen.
Hello, Allison. I wanted to first wish you a Happy New Year and tell you that I am really enjoying the way your podcast has turned out. It has really improved quite a bit. I enjoyed the conversation you have with Victor when you got your new mixer and your mic and stuff, and that sounds cool. I'm really impressed, and I wanted to say that I still am enjoying your podcast. I still listen to it faithfully, and even though I don't have a Mac, I enjoy listening to you and Bart talk and discuss how to do things with certain programs in a Mac. And as my girlfriend said, even on the show I did, how you seem to say things related to the blind and stuff, and that's really cool, and I'm impressed with that. I got a neat toy for Christmas. My girlfriend surprised me. I didn't know what to expect. Least of all expected this. I was going to buy it myself, but some finances came up where I couldn't afford it. Got a Nokia N810 tablet PC. That's a Linux-based tablet PC. It's a little bit larger than my Dell X51V, I think it is. Access F51V as a pocket PC, which pretty much it died because nobody's supporting it anymore, and there's no new software, and it won't even, they're not even putting Windows Mobile 6 into it. At least it's the last time I checked. This N810 is kind of interesting. I know some about Linux, but it's kind of like a Linux already, everything you need in it. Some programs I tried to install, they won't work. But I think because it's too new and some things I haven't figured out. It didn't come with an owner's manual, which I, like you, don't like to read unless I have to. Except for inside the machine, which, of course, I had to print it out, and it was like 52 pages. Anyway, the reason I'm letting you know this, because hopefully in about 2 or 3 weeks, I'll send you a review about it. If you want to check on it, just out of curiosity, go to Nokia.com/N810. But anyway, I'll just say goodbye for now. I just want to let you know I still am a faithful listener and appreciate all you're doing. And when I get a Mac, I'll be bugging you if that ever happens. And the community you've created on your podcast, I like with Bart and stuff. It's really fun to listen to. Anyway, you take care. Bye.
Thanks so much, Michael. I really appreciate the kind words you have for the show. I'm really glad when I hear that Windows users like the show too. You know, sometimes I think maybe I should make it only Mac-focused and then I could hit just that audience, but I don't seem to be able to keep myself to one subject very well. I mean, heck, I get waxing tips in here, so what am I talking about anyway? But thanks again for taking the time to send in your recording, Michael, and we look forward to hearing your review. Well, I'm very pleased with the audience this week. As you may recall, I noticed last week that no one had been listening to the show or reading from the blog from Vermont or Montana. It was inexplicable, as you might recall. Well, I gave the homework assignment for someone to figure out a way to get people from those two states to check out the show. Listener Anthony gets a big gold star for his effort. He actually drove to Vermont from Massachusetts just to complete the homework assignment. Okay, well, perhaps the fact that there was a wedding he wanted to attend in Vermont contributed to his dedication, but he still gets credit in my book. He even said he'll try to convert some Vermont residents to No Silicast listeners while he's there. Now, here's a great mystery. 3 people listened in from Montana, but but they did not take credit for completing the assignment. I'm glad to have you Montanians here. Let me know who you are. So, Alaska was the only state not checking in during the last month. Anyone game to take on that assignment? Come on, Anthony, road trip! Well, Steve and I are not big entertainers. In fact, we haven't thrown a big party since probably the 1970s. But we decided this year we were going to throw a New Year's party. We had about 35 people over and about 5,000 calories apiece planned food-wise for them. We had chicken wings and meatballs and egg rolls and quiche, along with all kinds of sandwiches and cheeses and M&Ms, even the dark chocolate ones. Anyway, the party got rolling around 7 p.m. People were having a grand time. And then about 9:15, a transformer on our block blew and knocked out our power. It was amazing, though. We just walked calmly to the flashlights and candles and started putting all those candles I've been wondering why we even owned anymore, distributing them around the house. We lit the place up and it was just beautiful. The party didn't even miss a beat and the environment was actually pretty lovely. We weren't able to cook any of the hot food, but luckily, since we'd planned on 5,000 calories apiece, when we only had 3,000 calories apiece to eat, it was tolerable. We made do. So that was fun, but the next morning, we had to clean up. Still without power. No vacuum. I had to use a broom and a dustpan. It was brutal. The grossest part was the garbage disposal was not able to be used, but we worked around that too. But by noon that next day, we still didn't have power. And by now, you figured out what critical energy requirement we were missing. What about internet access? We had laptops with partially charged batteries, but without a modem and a router. What were we going to do? What about when the batteries failed? What could we do? Well, I don't want you to worry too much about us because we found a solution. First of all, the power problem. I have two inverters that plug into the car cigarette lighter, and they give us AC power outlets. Whew. As long as we didn't wear the car battery around down too much, we were okay. Of course, since I know how to jump the battery now, thanks to Honda Bob's website, but we didn't push it that far. For internet access, we were very clever. Remember that I have a Verizon EVDO card, which plugs into my Express Card 34 slot on the MacBook Pro. That gives me high-speed internet access independent of my ISP. Good enough for me, but what about poor Steve? Well, it turns out that on the Mac, you can take in one format of internet access, like over the EVDO card, and then you can share it out to someone else through another network device. I could access the internet with the EVDO card and share it out through my airport wireless card to Steve. In the serious nerd camp will consider us quite clever, there are those who might consider us dorks. Well, I can live with that. Well, my buddy Ron told us our efforts were the nerd equivalent of camping in the outback. I like that. Speaking of Ron, he rescued us in the afternoon. He invited us over to his house to watch the Rose Bowl and drink his beer and use his internet access and power. We had a great time. Around 6 p.m. that night, when power was restored, we could return home. But the whole thing was quite an adventure. Guess it's time to actually do a review here. You know, I'm always on the lookout for easy and fun ways to make photo albums for the web. The reigning champion is still J-Album in my book, but Victor Cahiao from the Typical Mac User podcast at typicalmacuser.com showed me a really cool application called Postcard Viewer. The theme I really like shows your thumbnails as though they're kind of a bunch of old-style 1950s photos, you know, with the white borders, and they're kind of strewn across a black background, kind of like you just threw them out on a table, except that they amazingly landed in rows and columns. When you click on one of the thumbnails, it zooms up on screen. Then you can click it again and it zooms back into place on the screen and you can pick another random photo. You can also use your right, left, up, down arrows to flip through the photos if you'd rather do that. It even has a leopard quick look kind of feature. If you click on a photo, hitting the space bar will actually make it zoom back out. Bart figured that one out. He's gotten so used to using the space bar to zoom into photos and other documents that he used the space bar instinctively, and it worked. It's even fun how the page loads. It kind of throws the pictures out a few at a time on the screen and not in the order that you put them out there. They're just kind of plopping out in different places. Well, Postcard Viewer is an odd application to install. You install one application, then you install an app, a plugin for your favorite photo application. And then the first application kind of calls the other one. That probably doesn't make any sense, so let me walk you through it. First, you head over to airtightinteractive.com and download the application. Next thing you need to do is decide how you want to give the photos to Postcard Viewer. There are instructions for Photoshop, Picasa, iPhoto, Lightroom, even a PHP script for, people like Bart. Finally, you can manually create a Postcard Viewer gallery using a text editor and an imaging software of your choice. Each of these plugins are written by different people, which is confusing on the one hand, but it's also cool that it's open so that others can contribute to making Postcard Viewer even more useful. I chose iPhoto as my tool of choice. Clicking on the link for iPhoto took me to Haggis.net, where I could download iPhoto Exporter. In the instructions, it says to simply put this file in your iPhoto plugins directory in your application support library. But I didn't have an iPhoto directory inside there. I decided on a lark to simply create it in the path they suggested, and that worked just fine. They did also have a warning saying that you need to make sure Safari doesn't uncompress the package file. Well, I couldn't figure out how to stop it from doing that, and I dragged it in there uncompressed, and it worked just fine, so it didn't look like a package file. Maybe it still was, but it worked anyway. Once you've slapped that file into the plugins directory, you can open iPhoto, and you go to Export, and now you have a new option. The one downside is that the way they wrote it, the export menu doesn't seem to expand correctly yet for how many different tabs you have on there. If you haven't done a bunch of export options, you probably won't have this problem. But I've got Picasa and, Flickr, Facebook. I got a bunch of them in there. And the guy who wrote it needs to do a little bit of adjustment on that. He's looking for help if anyone wants to help him write that piece. So anyway, it truncates it a little bit, but you can figure out which one you're supposed to click. It says SFE dot dot dot, which should stand for SF export. Once you get over that hurdle, or maybe you didn't have the problem because you don't have a bunch of slop in there. Anyway, you can choose what type of gallery you want. Postcard Viewer is the good one. You have a bunch of options to play with in a really easy interface. You choose the size of your images, how many rows and columns, and how far in and out to zoom. Once you're done with that, you hit OK, and a short time your gallery is ready for viewing. This software is really easy and intuitive to use, once you get past the unintuitive install process, and it creates a really unique gallery style. The one thing I didn't like was that if you decide to make a minor change to the options, say to change from 5 columns to 3, it goes and regenerates everything, even the thumbnails and viewing graphics. JAlbum, in contrast, lets you choose whether to regenerate everything or let it reuse the bits it can, so the creation process goes much faster when you make minor edits. Luckily, Postcard Viewer is actually pretty efficient, and it creates the galleries very quickly, so this is not a huge problem to me. I like Postcard Viewer, and I definitely recommend it for making slick-looking web galleries through a photo tool of your choice and your operating system. I should mention that, of course, this works on other operating systems other than OS X. I included a link to one of my photo galleries so you can see how cool this thing looks. Well, I got yet another cool tech gadget from Santa Steve this year. He got me the Zoom H2 Handy Recorder. This is a digital recorder. It's maybe a little thicker than the first generation iPod, and it takes an SD card to store your recordings. The problem this gadget solves is it will give me the ability to make recordings away from my laptop. I haven't ever done that before, but all the other cool podcasters do it, so I think I need to learn how to do it too. The H2 runs $200, and I put a link in the show notes to Sam Ash where you can check it out. You know I hate to read manuals, but I happened to be on the 4-hour drive to visit Steve's relatives in Fresno when I decided to start playing with the H2. So on a lark, I started reading the manual. Turns out their manual is really well written. They did it in an interesting way. I know you're supposed to read cover to cover, left to right, the whole thing, but how many of us actually do that? Usually we just want to jump in and read the part that we want to read. Well, the interface is a little bit hinky. It's a little strange. It's not completely intuitive how to use it. So what they do is they put the instructions on how to do the interface on every single section in the whole book. It gets a little repetitive if you do read it left to right, but it's easy to skip over. But the advantage is if you just jump in and go, okay, I want to know how to do an external mic. You can just jump right in and you can do exactly what they say and you don't have to go, oh, I got to go back and read pages 1 to 10 in order to figure out how to use it. I thought that was really, really good. I've done a lot of reading left to right, but I've also gone, oh, I just want to jump ahead and learn this. And it's really worked well. The H2's crowning glory is that it has 4 microphone inputs. So you can set it for 4 different options. You can get stereo from the front, stereo from the rear, or actually 4-channel from all sides. What's the fourth option? I forget. Anyway, it's got a bunch of cool options on how much you can record. The way it achieves the four channels is it actually creates two stereo wave files, and you mix them together yourself in an application, say like GarageBand. On top of that, it'll take an external microphone input as well. So I decided to try and hook up my new Heil PR20, like Victor was suggesting I could do last week. The good news is that gave me one more trip to Sam Ash for an XLR to 1/8 inch adapter. Now I was good to go. The only problem was, it turns out you need a powered microphone in order to get any kind of big volume out of your external mic. Technically it works, but I wasn't able to get the kind of volume that I really wanted. Unfortunately, the PR20 is not powered. I can boost the signal significantly using tools like Wiretap Studio, but the problem with doing that is it also amplifies the noise, so you get a lot of hiss on the line if you try to do it. No worries, since my goal was to get more audio cables into my drawer to compete with the video and USB Ethernet cables I already had, this was a good investment. And the microphones, the built-in microphones, are really extraordinarily good. You can also hook up other devices like CD players and, you know, all kinds of other input devices, but I doubt I'll ever use that feature, but maybe you need to. Ooh, maybe I need to do it, though, because I could get more cables that way. Yeah, that's the ticket. Well, the H2 runs off two AA batteries or the included AC adapter, or even better, it includes a USB cable and you can power it off the USB bus power on your computer. It's nice to have all those options. There's a lot of different ways you might want to use it. Like I said earlier, the H2 takes an SD card, and Santa Steve was good enough to get me a 4 GB card so I can go crazy making recordings. It's hard to explain how much time you can record on a disc that size, because it definitely depends on how you record. Are you recording at 44.1 kHz or lower? Or are you recording in analog.wave format? Or maybe you're recording in MP3 format? Then you would get more recording onto there. Are you using that fancy four-channel recording we were just talking about, or only stereo? All right, I know it's complicated and will force me to do math to figure out all of the answers, but I think I can get a good couple of hours on here even if I don't resort to MP3 recording, which I don't want to do. I'd like to keep it in a wave format. Anyway, it should be enough capacity to bore you to tears for sure. There's two ways to deal with the SD card. The first, less complicated but more annoying option, is to shut off the H2, pull the card out, put it in a card reader on your computer, and see how your audio files are coming along. Wouldn't it be way more fun if the H2 could just act as a card reader itself? Well, it turns out it can do that too, unless you're running Leopard. But you're not completely out of the woods here, because it turns out you can install a firmware update to make it work with Leopard. Doing the firmware update was interesting. I had to download a file, put it on the SD card, turn the H2 on with AC power and the play pause button held down, swing a dead cat around my head, and lift my left foot up. I think there was salt over my shoulder in it too. But anyway, that was supposed to work, but it got an error. That's when I read more carefully that SDHC cards will not work for this process for some reason. Well, I didn't know what an SDHC card was, but in looking at my card, I noticed it did say SDHC on it, and I think it means high capacity. So, since it was a 4 GB card, it must be a high-capacity card. I swapped in a 512 MB card, and the firmware upgrade went flawlessly. Hey, I learned something along the way. HC must stand for high capacity. Well, I won't go into all the options for recording with the H2, but there's a crazy number of things you can do, like auto-record, where it'll record when you hit a certain threshold of sound. There's an option where you hit record, and then it picks up the 2 seconds before you started recording. That one's weird, but let's say you don't know when your subject will be interesting. You just hit the record button as soon as they are interesting, and the previous 2 seconds are already there. You can set a zillion different options for compression. Depending on whether it's vocals or speech or music, the options just go on and on and on. Like I said, once you get the hang of how the menus work, it's really easy to figure out how to mess around in all these options. The one thing I think I'll continue to have trouble with on the H2 is that if you hit record, doesn't actually start recording. Hitting record actually gets it ready to record and puts it in pause. And then you got to hit it again, and then it actually starts recording. How many times do you think I'm going to entirely miss a recording entirely because of that? I'm thinking about 20% of the time I've tried to use it so far, I've screwed it up. Hopefully I'll get the hang of it, but I'm still worried. It's going to be like those videos we all have of the floor of the water ski boat when we're supposed to be videotaping our husband doing some amazing jump through the waves. Oh, well, maybe that's just me. Anyway, if you're looking for a slightly expensive for recording mom's story of the old days, but really inexpensive tool, considering how priceless those recordings really are, or if you have an actual band and want to do some digital recording on the fly, check out the H2 Handy Recorder at samsontech.com. P.S. It's all Greg Lemon's fault over at themythpodcast.com because he showed me his H4, the $300 version, during the podcast expo last year, and I got jealous. I think it's important that as listeners, you understand that I'm not only a high-tech geek, I'm also a mom. And I'm not just a mom, I'm the coolest mom ever. You may think I'm just blowing smoke here, but I can prove it. I let my son Kyle light things on fire. A few years ago, I let him light a stuffed dinosaur on fire. That doesn't sound like much, but the fact that we doused him in lighter fluid first and put a ring of fire around helps my case, doesn't it? Well, I put a link in the show notes to this old video on YouTube so you can judge for yourself. It's really awesome when the whole head catches on fire. Well, over the years, I've let him burn things like his Spanish notebook, a model rocket we didn't need anymore, but the dinosaur is definitely the coolest burning episode. You might wonder why I bring this up right now. Well, I'll tell you why. Because this week, I let Kyle put a light bulb in the microwave. Yes, I let him turn it on and everything. I don't know if you've ever seen this before, but it's awesome. The light bulb actually lights up. It doesn't just light up, but it changes colors as it goes through the standing wave pattern of the microwave. You really need to do this because at the end it explodes and everything. It was cool. Well, I should explain that after 17 years of good service, we were finally about to retire our microwave. So it's not like I risked the destruction of a microwave of value. But I think you should, definitely. Of course, I put a link in the show notes to this new video on Vidler.com so you can see my light bulb experiment. All right, all tomfoolery and danger aside, in loading these videos up online, I have to make some opinions known about how these services work. I've been using YouTube, Vidler, and Facebook. Overall, I'm so over YouTube. YouTube is slow. It takes forever to upload a video. It only lets you upload 10 minutes or 100 megabytes. In contrast, Facebook is 300 megabytes or 15 minutes. And Vidler lets you post videos up to a half a gig. These low limits on YouTube should be enough to irritate me alone, but there's more. I uploaded the exact same video to Facebook and YouTube, and the YouTube one looks just horrible. Not only that, the Facebook video is actually much larger. Unfortunately, I can't share Facebook videos outside of Facebook to show you how much better it looks, but I took a screenshot of the same video on both YouTube and Facebook so you can see how the quality is in Facebook and how much clearer it is. All right, I could almost forgive them for the crappy quality and the low size limits, but both Steve and I have had a terrible time lately uploading videos to YouTube. Steve went through like 7 different options until he could get our OLPC video to upload to YouTube without errors, and that's after he cut the length down to their limits. I uploaded the light bulb microwave video 3 times to YouTube, but it never did upload there. Never told me why, never errored out, never even showed me that I'd tried. 3 separate times. Anyway, it uploaded perfectly to both Vidler and Facebook. So I'm like so over YouTube. Well, you know I'm a big fan of Text Expander, the utility that lets you store snippets of text to be called by shortcuts for stuff you have to type all the time. I did a full review of Text Expander back on show number 123. I use it to type in my email address, my signature for emails, my website address, Honda Bob's contact information, all kinds of stuff. This is kind of sideways, but you may also remember that I reviewed an application called Rapido Serial on the show before that, number 122. Rapido Serial has nothing to do with text snippets. Rather, it's a great place to store passwords and serial numbers for your applications. Well, what does Rapido Serial and Text Expander have to do with each other? Why would I bring them up together? Well, I promised that since I was so enamored with Rapido Serial, I would go out and check out their other Rapido products. Turns out they have one called Rapido Write that sounds like it might be a good competitor to Text Expander. According to their website at appformac.com, when you're writing text, you probably find yourself typing the same text again and again. Whether this is your name, your email address, the URL of your blog, your personal address, Rapido Write is here to save time by typing these frequently used texts for you. You just define your list of abbreviations and RapidoWrite will automatically show you related text as you type. Sounds to me like RapidoWrite is something that we ought to review. So RapidoWrite is freeware, and you're even free to distribute it if you like. RapidoWrite, when first launched, asks you where you want to store your abbreviations and also asks you if you want to import any abbreviations. Thought it would be cool to see if I could import my text expander abbreviations, but I couldn't figure out where they're stored. So I didn't get to test that. It's possible that works, but like I said, I don't know where they are. That's something that makes me nervous. I got to make sure those are getting backed up. So anyway, I went along with the defaults for RapidoWrite. RapidoWrite has just one simple window. On the left, it gives you a list of all the abbreviations you've made, and if you click on one of the ones you've made, you can see the full text and some formatting options in the right-hand panel. To create a new abbreviation, you click the plus sign at the bottom, type in the abbreviation, you know, the shortcut you plan to use, and then type in the bottom window the text you want to have typed when you enter that abbreviation. I don't use semicolons in real life for typing. I don't know, for some reason I never mastered what the heck they're for, so in Text Expander, I use them to end my abbreviations. For example, in Text Expander, if I type SIG followed by a semicolon, it enters my signature. I was kind of bummed at first because I found out that RapidoWrite only supports alphanumeric characters. First, I thought that would put a bit of a hamper on things because you have to make up a character string that you don't want popping up all the time. I'll explain in a minute why that doesn't turn out to be a problem. When you enter an abbreviation in your application, like let's say you're an Apple Mail, it shows you a cool-looking kind of gray and black completion panel. So you've typed in the characters that trigger it, and this little black and gray panel just kind of pops up. When that little completion panel pops up, all you do is hit a carriage return to accept the abbreviation. This is handy because if you don't want to enter the text, if, for example, you know, SIG for signature, you really wanted to type a different word or you wanted to, say, type the word signature, just keep typing and the little gray and black box just disappears. The other nice thing that it's good for is maybe you have several abbreviations that start with the same couple of characters. They'll come up in a list and you can pick the one you want so you don't have to type them out completely. In contrast, this is a little easier than Text Expander because in Text Expander, once you trigger it, man, you're going to get that abbreviation. For example, in the show notes, I wanted to type in SIG semicolon, but I can't type that anymore because when I type it, it turns into my signature. So I wasn't actually able to show it. I had to type in SIG space and the semicolon because I can't type it because it's going to trigger the abbreviation. One odd thing is that RapidoWrite doesn't update automatically. So when you put in a new abbreviation, you have to refresh the memory in RapidoWrite, and you can do that by hitting Command-R or quitting the application after you've entered a new abbreviation. That was a little bit weird. I've been a little annoyed lately with Text Expander because since its latest rev, it seems to take a pretty long time to launch as a preference pane. After it's been up recently and it's cached, it's not too bad. But I usually only update it about once a week, so it's annoying that it is a little bit slow. On the other hand, RapidoWrite is a full application, so it'll be interesting to see over time how fast it comes up in comparison when it's not cached either. Text Expander supports folders to sort your snippets, which RapidoWrite does not. One for Text Expander. Text Expander also lets you create snippets from the clipboard, so as long as you've written it once, it's a single keystroke to create a new snippet. That's really handy. On the other hand, RapidoWrite lets you create abbreviations that are left, centered, or right justified. That could be really handy in doing a signature for a formal document. Remember learning years ago you're supposed to put it over on the right? I don't know if anybody still does it, but maybe lawyers do or something. You can also set font characteristics by character inside the abbreviation. By that I mean you could have half of it bold, the other half italics, have some characters in red or blue, changing sizes of fonts, whatever you like. The main thing is that it lets you control how your text will look in your document, which is pretty cool. I don't believe that Text Expander has a feature similar to this. Now, RapidoWrite only works in Cocoa applications. I've never been able to keep track of the difference or the importance of Cocoa versus Carbon versus neither, but I think Cocoa are the more modern applications. Oddly enough, they specifically call out Safari 3 as not being supported, and that application is brand new in Leopard, I mean, as non-beta anyway. I guess it's not Cocoa. Maybe Cocoa's the old way? I don't know. But if it's not Cocoa, you ain't going to get anything out of RapidoWrite. I was a bit confused by RapidoWrite at first because it wasn't working, even in mail. I had to resort to reading some FAQs on the website where I read that you have to quit and reopen your applications after you install RapidoWrite or it's not going to be able to talk to them. Overall, I think RapidoWrite is a strong contender in the snippet abbreviation category. It is missing some features of Text Expander, but then again, it has some nice features of its own. RapidoWrite is free and Text Expander is $30 US. Might be worth giving RapidoWrite a try for that price. Check it out at appformac.com. Well, Honda Bob has been working on some even more new content for his website over at hdabob.com. He added a great page called What Is That Noise? I love the way he did this. The page is broken up by sound. There's clunk, 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 yelp, bubble, 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 sss, and the ever sinister knockety, 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 and many more. How many mechanics do you know who take the time to document such useful information in a format that normal humans can understand? I mean, you know which one knockety, knockety, knockety is. You can do that. I think it's great. He specializes in the maintenance and repair of Hondas and Acura, but like much of his website, the information is useful no matter what kind of car you have. I'm pretty sure knockety, knockety, knockety is the same in every car language. If you're lucky enough to drive a Honda or an Acura and you live in the LA or Orange County areas, you can do more than just learn from Honda Bob's website. You can have him come to your house to service your car. Give him a call at 562-531-2321 or email him at hdabob@aol.com. Honda Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, it's time for another edition of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from bartbouchatz.ie. How you doing, Bart?
Not too bad, Alison. A little cold today. Actually had snow.
Oh, poor thing. I had to put on a short sleeve shirt and shorts to go jogging on the beach this morning.
I'd love to see you try that here. You would have been frozen as an icicle.
Well, as I told the audience last week, it's pretty bad that Bart left me for 9 days. 9 days he had no internet access. It's possible it was harder on him than on me, but I was lonely while you were gone.
Yeah, I missed having our regular little chats over radio, I have to say. The day's not quite the same. But unfortunately, when I came back, I didn't come back to broadband as one would know it. My provider decided to try having an upgrade on the 24th of December, which is obviously a perfect time for such things. The upgrade proceeded to go terribly, horribly wrong, and they proceeded to let all their engineers go on holidays.
So they did a major upgrade and then went on holiday?
Yeah, even though it had completely and utterly failed. I'm paying for 4 megabits and currently getting in the order of about 80 kilobits.
Oh, my gosh. So just a little better than dial-up.
Yeah, although during the day, it tends to drop a little.
So 80 is your peak? That's when, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah, which is pretty, pretty poor.
Now, it had been getting worse over time, but just not this bad, right?
Yeah, no, before the upgrade, it was getting worse, and I was told that it would be fixed by this upgrade. And then the upgrade obviously went terribly, horribly wrong, and they seemed to, like it was only a localized problem before the upgrade. There's multiple sectors, it's sort of a wireless-based broadband, so there's multiple sectors on the one mast, and it was just my sector that was having trouble. So I had neighbors who were on different sectors who had perfect broadband, and they couldn't understand why I was complaining. And then after the upgrade, this mast, and from what I can tell, 4 or 5 other masts as well, all went belly up. And basically, the entire county of Kildare seems to be without broadband from this particular company.
Oh, my gosh. Now, so this company is called ICE?
Yeah, ICE Broadband. They're pretty much on my list of cowboys now. They've decided that answering phone calls or returning calls or answering email is all a little too much to bother with, probably because they're getting shouted at left, right, and center by some very grumpy people.
Now, why don't you just switch providers?
Well, I'm locked into a contract. until June.
Now, does that contract guarantee you any speeds?
I have to have a very good read of it before I go and shout at them some more. I want to have the letter of the contract memorized before I talk to them again. But yeah, I certainly won't be getting them again. As soon as the contract ends, that's it.
Oh,
for a lifetime, I shall never be dealing with these Muppets again.
Well, now, if you're on, people are going to be wondering, if you're on sub-dial-up speeds, how are we talking right now?
Yeah, that would be because I went and spent €89 today to go and buy myself a HSDPA modem for my laptop so that I could get online that way. So I'm now paying two people for broadband instead of one.
Nice, nice. Now, for the Americans around here, it's that's $130 to buy it. Then what do you pay per month on that?
Per month, it's, I can't remember the exact price, it's 18 something, so we'll say €19, which gives you 10 gigabits as part of your bundle. And then if you go over that, they start to charge pretty high prices, so it's €0.05 per megabyte, and that adds up pretty quickly. That's €20 for a gigabyte, and it just goes uphill from there.
Yeah.
Sorry, 20 megabytes for a euro. Anyway, no, it's a lot of money.
So be really careful.
Don't want to go over your 10 gigs.
So no BitTorrent for you this week?
No, this is for email, internet, and Skype only. And there's no way I could use it for any sort of downloading.
Right. Yeah, so €19 per month is $28 per month, which actually sounds pretty good. What kind of speeds are you supposed to get with that?
It's, quote, up to 3.6 megabits. Now, I'm having some teething problems with it, but I did only get the thing a few hours ago, and when I rang support, they said that you need to allow at least 24 hours before things are properly initialized on the network. So it may just be that I haven't got onto HSDPA yet, and that I'm still using GPRS or something.
I see. Well, for comparison...
So at the moment, it's not great. But for comparison, I mean, 3.6 megabits is close to my broadband speed of 4 megabits.
So 3.6 megabits at $28 per month, in comparison, the Verizon EVDO card I have is around 1.5 megabits per month for, I believe, or 1.5 megabits per second for around $60 per month. So you're going like three times as fast for half as much money.
Yeah, that sounds like I'm getting a much better deal, actually.
Yeah.
Although at the moment it's running way slower than 3.6. It's running at about 0.3. But it's working enough to get Skype through, and I can browse the web without any problem. So it's a big step up from my broadband, in quotation marks.
Yeah, I like how you keep calling it broadband. Well, we did promise that we wouldn't keep this whole show going on whining and complaining, because we both have something fun to talk about, right?
Yes, we've been putting this off for, well, I've been putting this off for weeks now while I'm waiting for you to get your one. But we finally both have our lenses that we've been looking for ages. So now I can finally talk about them.
So Bart and I compared notes early on. Actually, I think this all started with when Merlin Mann said on MacBreak Weekly that he bought a lens that changed his life. He bought a 50 millimeter lens with that was a really, really fast lens. And so everybody's been running out getting these. Bart and I started looking into them. We both have the Nikon D40, and the Nikon D40 has the autofocus in the lens, not in the body. So we're kind of restricted on what kind of lenses we can buy. And it turns out Nikon does.
I find out the hard way.
Yeah. Nikon does not sell a fixed focus 50 millimeter autofocus lens. So we were forced to.
Hang on. Back up for 1 minute there. We don't want a 50 millimeter lens. We want a 30 millimeter lens.
Well, okay. This
is equivalent to a 50 millimeter lens, and this. I should probably explain this, because on a 35mm film, a 50mm lens gives you, I think they call it natural perspective. So everything looks like it would with the eye. You know, all the perspectives and stuff look right. And so that's sort of the ideal. But digital cameras don't have a 35mm high sensor. Well, apart from really, really expensive ones that cost a few grand for just the body. So they have smaller sensors. So you actually have to add in what they call a cropping factor, which for the D40, I believe, is 1.6. So 30 millimeters multiplied by 1.6 equals approximately 50 millimeters. Ergo, that's why we bought a 30 millimeter lens.
Okay, so I was still speaking in 35 millimeter language. It's the equivalent of a 50 millimeter in 35 millimeter world, right?
Exactly, but it's a 30 millimeter lens.
Okay. So what we're going for is something without, it's not a wide angle, it's not a zoom, it's a natural perspective.
Yeah, it's a natural perspective lens and it's fixed focus, so it doesn't zoom. It's always 30 millimeters.
So another key feature of this lens is that it's a fast lens. What does fast mean, Bart?
Okay, well, FAST is a slang word photographers use when talking about the f number of a lens. Sometimes they're called bright lenses as well. But basically, if you have a low f number, you have a fast or a bright lens. And it just means that the lens can take in an awful lot of light very quickly. So when there's very little light around, you can still take pictures, while people with high f number lenses can't.
So the lenses that came with our camera, we had a wide angle zoom lens, and that I think was like a 3.5 or something, 3.4 or something like that.
It's a 3.5 to 4. So depending on what focal length you have the zoom set at, you get a different F number.
So now what's really slick is we can take pictures. I took pictures by candlelight on New Year's Eve, and they came out, as long as everybody promised to hold really still.
Well, yeah, it depends how far you push it. But within, say, a room with just ordinary lighting, you can still take pictures pretty much normally, and you won't have to get people to stand still. But if you turn things down way down to the point where you have no lights at all, just a few candles, then, yeah, you're going to have to get people to stay still. But with any other camera, you'd be completely blown out of the water. You wouldn't be able to take any pictures.
The other advantage,
without a flash.
The other advantage is the shallow depth of field.
Well, you see, I'm not sure. It isn't an advantage. In some senses, it's a hindrance. If you're trying to take a picture of a room, it ain't going to work because you're focused on just a very, very small part of that room. But for taking portraits, it's fantastic because the subject of your portrait is perfectly in focus, yet the background is beautifully out of focus, and so is anything nearer in the foreground. So that the subject of your portrait really takes center stage, and it looks like a magazine shoot or something.
But
it's only good for portraits, though.
I'm a sucker for that kind of picture. I just love a real shallow depth of field. Like, you see these ones of like a baby where it's, the eyes are crystal clear, but by the time you get back to the ears, it's actually starting to blur already. I love that kind of shot.
Yeah, and you really want as fast as possible a lens. Now, f1.4 really is very fast because most people would get a fast lens and buy an f1.8 or something. That extra 0.4, it's madness, really, but my God, have we had fun with it.
In fact, we're going to post, I'll post a link to the lens that we actually got. And again, if you have a different kind of camera, if you have a different kind of SLR, you can probably buy your manufacturer's lens and not have to spend near as much as we did. But we're also going to post a couple of pictures, our favorites that we've taken with this new lens.
Yeah, actually, I've already sent you one link, but I'm going to send you a second one just to demonstrate the shallow depth of field. It's a group photograph with sort of three rows of people, sort of people in the foreground, people in the middle ground, and people in the background. And only the people in the middle ground are in focus, which it's very weird looking, but it really demonstrates the depth of field thing.
Right, right. I knew you wouldn't be able to stick to one picture. I was waiting to see when you'd send me a second link.
Yeah, I'm going to have trouble sticking to two, but okay, no, we leave it at that. Now, the first link is actually a picture of our university at night. And what's important to note here is this wasn't done with a tripod or anything like that. This was a handheld point and click, and it came out pretty well, I would say.
Just gorgeous.
Notice it's not actually horizontal. It looks like the university is at a slope, but that's my bad.
The picture I'm going to be showing is a picture taken on New Year's by candlelight, handheld. And it's the four candles you see in the picture on the four guys holding the candles. That is all of the light that I have in that room. So I just couldn't believe it came out so good. I just love this lens.
Yeah, we should probably grab an example of a portrait as well. And that, I think that, do you have a good portrait? Then we have two each.
Yeah, I'll look around. I either do or I'll just take one.
Well, yes, that works too. You can see if it sits still for a moment. Click, and you're done.
Right, right. All right, well, I think that's probably going to wind it up for this week. I'm glad you could do a midweek here since you're leaving me again over the weekend.
Yeah, I get to go celebrate Christmas in January. Go figure. But then we're back to normal and hopefully actual broadband. I'll be very grumpy if the next time I'm talking to you we're still dealing with low numbers of kilobits.
Yeah, I don't think I want to talk to you if this is still down on Monday.
I'll be very grumpy.
I think so. All right, Bart, very glad to have you back, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, talk to you soon, and as ever, until next time, happy computing.
Hopefully Bart's broadband woes will be over by next week so we can get an even better audio recording. But for now, that's going to wrap it up for this week's episode of the NoSilicast. Please keep all these great emails coming by sending them to allison@podfeed.com. I love to hear from you. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.